The U.S. economy is pointed at recession. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Just when the U.S. economy enters and then recovers from recession will be determined by a panel of experts. What we have today is data that meet a shorthand informal definition of recession, two consecutive financial quarters of no growth but instead shrinkage. The government reported this morning economic activity contracted by 0.9% in the spring. It had already shrunk in winter. Marketplace's Nova Safo has more.
Second quarter GDP was dragged down by a number of factors, a decline in the retail sector, even the release of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. But among the biggest factors, says economist Diane Swank of the accounting firm KPMG, was the housing market.
That canary in the coal mine is housing, and it really did crater. And I think that's important to remember because that's the most interest rate sensitive sector out there.
And interest rates are going up, but the economy is still adding jobs. That's why Fed Chair Jerome Powell doused recession concerns yesterday.
2.7 million people hired in the first half of the year. It doesn't make sense that the economy would be in recession with this kind of thing happening.
And the Labor Department just said fewer people signed up for unemployment aid last week. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
The 10-year interest rate is down sharply at 2.67%. The Dow is down 0.1%, 35 points. The S&P is down 0.3%. The NASDAQ is down 0.6%. As natural gas prices in Europe soar, given Russia's decision to reduce the flow, one of the world's largest chemical companies, Germany's BASF, is planning to cut its production of something else, ammonia, made in factories that burn a lot of gas. Thing is, you need ammonia for fertilizer, Marketplace's Lily Jamali reports.
Most of the ammonia used to make the nitrogen-based fertilizers that are essential to modern farming comes from natural gas. So when ammonia producers like BASF cut back on natural gas, Kevin McNew, chief economist at Farmers Business Network, says that can impact the supply of fertilizer needed to grow a variety of crops.
Things like corn, things like wheat, things like cotton are heavily reliant on what's in the soil and the way we get most of our nitrogen in commercial agriculture is through applications of fertilizer.
Fertilizer prices had been rising already because of supply chain constraints that began before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, says Patrick Westhoff of the University of Missouri.
Farmers spent about $28 billion on fertilizer in this country last year. We don't have final numbers yet, but it's probably going to be well over $40 billion this year.
And as they rise even higher, he says consumers should expect food prices to go up as well. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
For our Econ Extra Credit series, normally we watch documentaries on marketplace themes, but for extra fun here in high summer, it's Lessons from a Work of Fiction, nominated for 14 Emmys now, the dark comedy called Severance on Apple TV+. It's about employees of an ominous corporation that enforces a kind of radical work-life balance through brain surgery. People can't remember their home lives when they come into work. Work becomes a blank when they leave. Just one piece of this fictional satire is an off-the-charts inter-office rivalry in this very siloed place. Adam Grant at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School watched it. Welcome.
Thanks, David.
The folks at Macro Data Refinement, which is one little department of this fictional Lumen Corporation in the show, have cultivated a deep, more than a suspicion, a deep antipathy toward the folks in another part of the company called Optics and Design, OND. Here's the clip.
How many departments are there?
Probably
around
30.
Five.
No one's quite sure.
OND tried a violent coup on the others decades ago, and that's why they reduced them down to two, and that's why they keep us all so far apart now.
That's an absolute fiction.
Did they ever kill anyone?
Nope. There was no coup. No one killed anyone.
Then why don't we ever hang out?
I mean, I'm 99% sure there was no coup.
I don't know. Maybe these inter-office rivalries are not so bad. They pit different divisions to outdo each other. And if you want resources from corporate, then fight for them.
There's a time and a place for rivalry. We know that having a common enemy can be a huge source of motivation. But there's some great research by Gavin Kilduff and his colleagues showing that when you're competing against a rival, you are more likely to do whatever it takes to reach the goal. And so there's a risk that people will cut corners here. And then, of course, you're not going to learn from each other. And so one of my big worries when we see these kinds of silos is that the whole is ultimately going to end up being less than the sum of the parts.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I don't know if you know this, but they filmed Severance. The ominous corporation Lumen is filmed in the old offices of Bell Labs. And Bell Labs, this incredible research institution in its day, really worked hard to break down those silos, to set up actually the architecture of that building so that people would meet.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that the show was filmed at the headquarters of Bell Labs, which is ironic on so many levels. There are many, many stories from the history of Bell about how people who didn't even overlap at all in their expertise would bump into each other and then generate ideas that ultimately solve big problems in the world. But we can actually structure those interactions. And there's a great example recently. Just take salespeople randomly assigned to just have lunch with a coworker they've never met once a week. And they do that for a month. 4 months later, those two salespeople each have on average 24% higher revenue. Oh. And I'd love to see more workplaces actually try to structure those unstructured interactions.
Adam Grant, organizational psychologist and a professor at Wharton. His latest book is called Think Again. He also hosts the podcast Work Life. Adam, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Now, Adam is a best-selling author of a number of evidence-based management books, and I got his take on a cheesy self-help book full of nonsense masquerading as wisdom that's in that show. Marketplace.org, if you missed that part of the conversation on the air today. Econ Extra Credit. Sign up to follow along as we get back to the documentaries next month. It's free. Marketplace.org/newsletters. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with our morning report. We're from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.